Excited to welcome WNBA coach Renika Hodges to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Hodges is the associate head coach for the Connecticut Sun in the WNBA. In addition to her duties with the Sun, she serves as the head coach of Phantom BC in the Unrivaled Basketball League, where she was named the 2026 Coach of the Year. Her professional trajectory includes a significant tenure as an assistant coach for the New York Liberty, a role in which she helped the team achieve the 2024 WNBA championship. This followed a period of development in the collegiate ranks where she serves as an assistant coach for both Colgate University and Old Dominion University. Her entry into the coaching profession began at LSU, where she acted as a special assistant to the head coach for the 2017-2018 season. Before coaching, Hodges played 11 seasons in the WNBA. She was selected as the 15th overall pick in the 2005 WNBA draft by the Houston Comets and competed in 320 career games.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Hodges, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Awesome to talk to you. Coming off an unrivaled season. Pretty good, Coach, from worst to first. And I know you wanted one more win, but Coach of the Year and incredible success. Talk to us about that.
Thank you. We didn't have the success that we wanted. We wanted that championship. But in all, I'm proud of the work that my team put in and the results and the growth from the first day to the last. And also, I'd like to congratulate Miss because they played a fantastic game. I think it was a good indicator of how the unrivaled season went. There was so much balance. Anybody could beat anybody on any given night. And I'm just proud. And I'm grateful for the experience that I was able to gain by being a part of Unrivaled and all the things that bought for me.
Tremendous season. A lot of fun to watch. I know we watch many games in my household. Talk to us a little bit about coaching development, because the cool thing for you and many other WNBA assistants, future potential WNBA head coaches, is you're getting coaching reps in Unrivaled. Talk to us about that first.
Yeah, that was important for me, just to be able to have those reps. I think that is essential for any young coach that's aspiring to be a head coach, just to have those reps and be able to understand who you are as a coach by experience, hands-on, having that hands-on experience. So I think that being a part of Unrivaled, I looked at it like it was a training ground. All the things that you need to have a high level of understanding, Unrivaled provided that. So as far as building a roster from scratch, starting with the draft, to implement the system, to managing people, not only the players, but a staff, and just learning a little bit more about yourself and who you want to be as a coach, and just having that opportunity to grow, I think that it was super essential for me.
Probably not too many surprises. You've been around the game for so long as a player and a coach, but maybe just from a coaching perspective, what was one of the challenges that maybe was a little more challenging than you thought being the head coach in Unrivaled?
I think I looked at the situation as a whole as a challenge just because it was new. So as a first-time head coach, like, you have ideas of things that you want to do, how you want to play, all of those things, but implementing and seeing those things through and being able to make adjustments and having to deal with just different personalities and managing people, I think all of it was a challenge. And for me, it was a good challenge. I look at it as all positive because it's all a part of the experience, it's all a part of the growth. And I really enjoyed the experience that I had.
When you first started your coaching career, we're going to dive into a little bit of kind of the player to coach transition and then the assistant to head coach transition and all the different transitions in a career like yours. But maybe first talk to us, when you first transitioned to coaching, especially in the WNBA, you were coaching against some players that you potentially played with or you played against. Talk to us about that role and some of the responsibilities or some of the insights that came up from that experience.
I think just starting off with playing against some of the players that I had played against, I think I was grateful, or I was fortunate, to not be in a situation where I was coaching players that I had played with. That was one of the things that I had an understanding of pretty early. But I think being able to have the experience of transitioning to coaching and to play against some of the players that I played, I knew their games. So coming back into the W after my high school stints and my college stints, I felt right at home just because I had been part of the WNBA for so long and I had institutional knowledge that it felt comfortable to me. Now, I'm not saying that there still wasn't an adjustment period because there was. There's always an adjustment. But I think it came a little bit easier because I had so much knowledge of the game and the players.
Course you did. And talk to us a little bit about college coaching versus WNBA coaching, because you experienced both at very high levels.
Yeah. I would say coaching, to me, coaching is coaching. I think that players are going to be players on every level. It's all about how you can relate to them, how you could communicate, and how you could give information and get them to buy into what you're asking. And I think that starts with, are they going to buy into you as a person? Because the relationship aspect is important on every level. So I think the difference maybe in college is obviously the WNBA is a higher level, but you have more time. Just because the WNBA season is only half the year, just in the summers, and in college it's full time. Kids have to go to school, you have to recruit, you have the season, then you have the off season. So as many things that go into it. For me, coaching is coaching, and players are players.
Have you been able to go into a little bit of a mentorship role with some future coaches that you've been coaching or who have been around the game that maybe want to transition to coaching? And then if so, what are some of those things that maybe players misunderstand about coaching that you've helped them understand?
You know what? I like to look at myself as a mentor because I feel like that's part of my responsibility as a coach. And if I'm being honest, that's part of the reason why I went into coaching. We as players, we always say we don't want to play until the wheels fall off, but sometimes it happens. And I played probably 3 years longer than I should have, and I ultimately became a mentor. I had to take on that mentorship role, and I found myself loving that because I cared more about the success and the growth of a young player and helping them to understand what professionalism looks like more than winning. And not to say that I didn't want to win, I did. I still wanted to win, but I really cared about that. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to go into coaching. So now for me, that's part of who I am. I always want to share knowledge, I always want to share information and share some experiences that I've had. Hopefully, trying to make the lives and the career of a player or a coach just a little bit easier by just sharing that information. Because I know it was many a days where I wish somebody would have just told me, somebody would have just shared something with me. So for me, that's been like one of the biggest joys of my career. And I think just starting out as an assistant coach and being that coach that was relatable to the players and having my individual players that I work with. I think that was just part of it, but I didn't look at it like anything extra. It's just part of who I am.
Is it a compliment that somebody had mentioned you as someone who speaks player, that you
Yeah.
were able to speak to players very well as a coach?
Oh, surely, because that's who I am. I talk about this all the time, and some people may think that it's a little bit crazy, but I was a player for more days than I have been a coach. So that's who I am. There still has to be some separation, and I understand that. You can't show up as a coach the same way that you showed up as a player, but that's one of the things that I think works to my advantage. The fact that I played for so long and I could relate to them on different levels, but I also understand how to separate the player approach from the coach approach.
Love it. So, what are some examples of you speaking player that you can help coaches understand?
For me, just being relatable. In all aspects, we can talk about from the human aspect first. They want to have somebody that they connect to, they could connect with, somebody that they can talk to, and somebody who gives information to them in a way that they could process it. And that looks different for everybody. You have coaches that come from all different backgrounds. You have some who's played, you have some who haven't played. And sometimes it could just be hard to connect, and sometimes it's easy. But some people, I think I've just been fortunate enough to be able to connect in that way, but also be vulnerable enough to show the human side. And I think that is super, super important when you're dealing with young women.
Players of this modern era, do they value the stories and the experiences that you went through during a very different era of basketball?
I tread lightly with that. I think I try to give information and share experiences as necessary. I don't think it's a good idea to always talk about yourself and to always draw from your own experiences to give them information. Because sometimes that could be detrimental, because sometimes players don't want to hear what you did 20 years ago. I think it's a different way that you have to give that information and have them to understand that they are the most important. That it's not about me. It's not about me. It's more about you and how can I help you to grow and develop as a player and as a person.
A lot of former players that I've talked to moving and transitioning into coaching One of the biggest challenges is obviously the analytics part, where when you played, the analytics weren't as big a piece, but now they're obviously a huge part of it. So talk to us about your learning curve and your learning process in terms of developing this part of your coaching.
I've had experience with it just being on the WNBA level in New York. We relied heavily on analytics, but if I'm thinking about who I am at the core, I'm a player and I always want to go off what I know and feel. But when you think about how the games evolve and you think about the mentality and the mindset of the players, you have to break it down to them in so many different ways. And the way that I process that is, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? And why? And the analytics comes into place when we start talking about why, because you do have to give them the information and you do sometimes have to explain to them why we're doing it, because it's just the way it is. Players like information, and I think you could go off field. You can go off video, never lies, and then you always have the stats and the analytics to back up the reason why you want to do all these things. So I think the way that the game has evolved and how we are incorporating analytics into it, I think it's a great element and it's an extra component that is very well needed and much appreciated.
Absolutely. And Unrivaled is basically like a mini team, right? You're reducing the roster size. Talk to us about how you approach that from day one, establishing the culture for your team and establishing the style of play for your team. Talk to us about that process for a smaller version of what might be a future WNBA team that you coach.
I'll start with the draft and how I wanted to build my team. I wanted to make sure that I covered every base of who I wanted to be as a coach and how I wanted to play. I wanted to have good people. I wanted to have players that had a winning mentality. I wanted to have defenders. We talked about that all the time with my players. I wanted to have players that can score in a multitude of ways. I wanted to have a couple of players that could shoot. And then I was thinking about how I wanted my locker room to be, like the type of personalities that I needed to be in there. And I wanted players that knew how to have fun, but also understood how to have fun and also be professional. And I think that I had a good mix this year with the Phantom.
Talk to us about building your defensive system in Unrivaled.
For me, that didn't change. Whether it's 5-on-5 or whether it's 3-on-3, to me, the foundation of any defense is 1-on-1. You have to be able to guard the ball. You have to commit to guarding the ball, guarding your player, and then everything else after that is secondary. And I think the part about Unrivaled is there isn't that much help. 5-on-5, you can be hidden. You can cover up some of the mistakes, but in Unrivaled, it's the space to be exposed. So we had to commit to that 1-on-1 defense early, and I was a stickler about that throughout training camp for maybe first 2, 3 weeks. I could remember Kelsey Plum asking me, "Coach, are we ever gonna play offense?" Yeah, we're gonna get to offense, but we have to understand that there's high-level offensive players here at Unrivaled. Everybody could score. I think the team that can get the most stops and that will commit to the defensive end of the floor will be the team that would have success. I had to get them to buy into that, and it was a challenge, but it was also well worth it in the end.
What are some important techniques in one-on-one defense? And I've heard this reference before about Unrivaled from other coaches, and I've been fortunate to talk to one player about it. And they all said that they developed individually so much more defensively in one-on-one matchups playing Unrivaled. And it makes sense with less help defense. So can you give us a deep dive in terms of the technique or some of the things that can help an individual defender be better?
For me, it depends on what the situation. Like if we're talking about on ball, you have to be able to guard the ball at least 3 dribbles. If we're talking about closing out, you want to close out and try to keep the ball out of the middle. We had some high level offensive players in Unrivaled. If you looked at a lot of the games, if they were getting into the middle of the floor, it was very hard to contain them. So you look at it from that angle, and then will. When you think about 1-on-1 defense, you could talk about the technique, you could talk about all of these things. Each coach has a different philosophy, or different things that they believe in. But the one thing that I know is also going to boil down to is will. Are you going to take pride in your 1-on-1 defense? And are you going to be able to control or limit your player and think about their tendencies? And I think that was huge and Unrivaled, just being able to understand the opposing team's tendencies and who you were guarding and how you could limit them.
So without those extra help defenders, were you still influencing the ball relative to individual scout, certain places?
Surely, I don't want to give away too many of my secrets, Chris,
We're
but
here
we
to give them
definitely,
away, coach. Don't worry, we're here to give them away.
but surely, we definitely want to defend the tendencies, because you can't guard every single player the same, because every player has different strengths and different skill sets. So we definitely try to cater our defense to what those players like to do and also what worked well for us.
What did you find ball screen wise? Obviously, a ton of ball screen in 3-on-3. So, talk to us about some ball screen defensive strategies.
For us, Club Phantom, I thought we had a ton of success when we iced the ball. I talked about not allowing the offensive players to get to the middle of the floor. I think maybe halfway through the season, we really committed to the ice when we started with just over and protect. We found that keeping the ball on the sides and limiting players from getting into the middle, it was really helpful for us. And we were able to force players to be a little bit uncomfortable and get them out of their comfort zones.
Makes sense. And talk to us then. I know Kelsey and you finally got to offense. So talk to us about putting in some offense. Was it, did you put it in 3-on-3 or is it more 2-on-2? Or what was the way to be able to shape and evolve your offense with install to execution?
I would like to lead with this. I think player development is essential in everything that you do offensively because you want your players to sharpen up their skills in every single area. And on three, just like defensively, offensive, you can't be hidden because there's only three players out there. So you have to be able to do so many different things. So we really focused on player development from the beginning. We had a plan in place for each player and all the things that they needed to do to help our system excel, and also the things that they wanted to do and things that they wanted to get better at, because it wasn't just about Unrivaled. It's about developing these players, for the longevity of their career. So I think we had that, and we committed 25 minutes, 30 minutes every single day just to doing player development. And I think when I started to build the offense, I just put in sets 3-on-3, just put in actions, and just was able to see how we could capitalize in some of those sets with the skill sets that we had. And I think as the season went, I had to get a little bit more creative in what I wanted to do, because as the season goes, everybody knows everybody's sets. And then I was fortunate to have Kelsey Plum and to have Aaliyah Boston. I had to get creative to find different ways for them to score. And then they played very well together and off each other. And if you watched it, AB's game evolved. Her game expanded. So I was able to do more things offensively by having her.
And that is the hard balance with this. It's not really the off season. There's no off season for these players anymore. But talk to us about that part of it. Like Aaliyah Boston, for example. Yeah, this is an opportunity for her to try some things, to explore some things, to do some things that maybe she doesn't get to show in 5-on-5, and she gets to get more confident. And just her as an avatar, but talk in general about that process for you as a coach to be able to help a player and encourage a player to be able to explore something.
Listen, that's what this thing is all about, especially during the off season. Players get in a gym. They want to work on a game. They want to get better at some things that maybe they weren't the best at. You also want to continue to work on the things that you're already good at. You don't want to just throw those things out of the window, just focusing on things that you need to get better at. But for me, this is what it was about: developing the players, helping them to get better in areas that they wanted to get better at and areas that I needed them to get better at for Phantom to have success as a whole. Like I mentioned, we had the player development plans implemented from the first day, and we worked every day on something new. And if I could speak to Aaliyah Boston in particular, she was able to stretch the floor. She was able to shoot the three. I want to say when we started out, she told me, "Coach, I want to shoot threes." I'm like, "Okay, you can shoot threes if you've been working on it. If you one for three, then okay, I don't have a problem." But she exceeded my expectation that we got to a point where I wanted to draw plays for AB to actually shoot threes. So for me, it was good to see that the work that she put in and how she committed to her own growth, the success that we were able to have because she was so versatile. And I look forward to watching her this WNBA season and use those things in a 5-on-5 setting.
Yeah, except when you're playing against her, if she's knocking down those threes. But that's awesome to hear. And talk to us a little bit about roles, especially for a coaching staff. You've been on so many different coaching staffs as a player and as a coach, and now you had to establish roles for your coaching staff as a head coach at Unrivaled. So talk to us about some of the things that are most important to you, first of all, as an assistant coach when it comes to being able to be defined in a role within a team.
What was most important to me as an assistant coach? I think the thing that was most important to me as an assistant coach was understanding my role. I think that's the case in any team setting. You have to understand roles have to be established, and you have to understand what it is that's being asked of you and execute that. And also understanding that anything extra that you could provide outside of what's being asked is just extra, because you don't want to put a person in a box, but you just want to make sure that you are doing what's asked, because the coaching staff is no different than the players in the team. You want to assemble your coaching staff the same way you assemble a team. You're thinking about the strengths and weaknesses and how can we all complement each other. And I think I understood that early on. And I think that my mindset never changed from a player. I made a career out of being a role player. So once I got onto the staff, it was easy for me to just fit in seamlessly in any situation that I was in, and then understand the important dynamics of the staff. And I think one of the most important things that I don't know people don't really talk about or that could go unnoticed is like the balance that you have on a staff and how you work with each other and how you complement each other and how that could create a safe space and bring joy. You want to go to work every day and you want to enjoy the people that you work with. And I think that I've had some really good experiences in my coaching career that I want to build my staff in the same way and make sure that I had good people first on my staff.
Love that, coach, and creating a safe space. We talk about that a lot, especially when it comes to youth coaching. So, can you give us some insights in terms of how you create that safe space for players and how you liked it as a player, particularly to be able to have that type of safe space?
How I created the safe space for players. I think I started with I wanted to understand who they were as people first. Before I talked about any basketball, after I drafted the team, I called each and every player on the phone and I just wanted to talk because sometimes it's you play against these players, but you don't necessarily know who they are as people if you hadn't really worked with them before. And then I also wanted to understand who they were so I could understand what kind of locker room I'm going to have. I need to understand how I want to show up, how I need to give them information. What type of empathy I need to show. I need to have an understanding of who these players were. So I just wanted to know who they were as people. I wanted to know what their biggest pet peeve was. I wanted to know what they did in their free time. And it wasn't just a chit chat on the phone with them. It was all because I needed to have an understanding of them first before I tried to talk about anything X's and O's. And I think that goes a long way with players, just trying to understand them because everybody comes from a different background. Everybody receives information different and everybody needs something different. So for me, having that understanding of who they were from the beginning, I think it made my job that much easier.
I'm curious, and please don't share specific players, but what are some examples of pet peeves that players have at that level that you can account for as a coach?
I'll just give one example, like a generalization or the lack of accountability, like players crave accountability. You mean sometimes they can't handle the truth when you give them the truth. You still have to do it. You also have players that process information different. So if you're a coach and you're always generalizing, one player might process that, oh, she's not talking to me. Maybe she's talking to her, but she did the same thing. So I think just being able to understand those situations and understand those smaller nuances of the psyche of a player, I think that's super, super helpful.
It's just a fascinating thing to be able to hear that. And the fact that a player craves the thing that they also don't like
Yeah.
is part of the challenges of coaching, isn't it?
Yeah, it's part of the challenge, but I also find that being a truth teller, it could take you a long way. Like they may not understand it in the moment or they may not want to accept it in the moment, but ultimately they're going to come to their senses. It could be 20 years later, but that's part of coaching. But you know that you gave the truth and you tried to do things the right way without demeaning a player, but just understand that this is needed for growth.
Hey, coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. How do you decide who your biggest impact players are? Traditional stats don't tell the whole story, which is why high-level pro and college teams rely on analytics systems like Hoopsalytics to make data-driven lineup decisions. Examining team stats when a player is on the floor tells a more compelling story. For example, you can use net points per possession to determine your best two-way players, as well as your offensive and defensive stars, or use the team rebounding percentage for each player to see who has the biggest impact on rebounding. The results may surprise you. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's HOOP. SALYTICS.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. Talk to us about the Plum Boston pick and roll, which was elite. And as a coach, it's like sometimes we get in these situations where something's so elite that we're like, should we keep running it? Should we diversify it? But then sometimes you just keep doing it and it keeps working. And it was really noticeable. And certainly the numbers paint that too, that it was incredibly high efficiency. So talk to us about managing that type of elite concept.
That was a joy for me to watch too, as a coach. So for me, my job
You
was
can
just
be
to
a
put.
fan as a coach, right?
I could be a fan as a coach. And I think that is, I don't know if I had to learn that. I just enjoyed it. It was joyous to watch the level in which they competed at and how they enjoyed working with each other because that didn't just start in the games. They worked with each other every single day in practice for hours, I don't know, every day. So they committed to each other. And that was something that I loved to watch. And as a coach, you want to see your players have good camaraderie and enjoy working with each other. So for me, my job as the coach was just to continue to put them in situations where they could have success. And I think that you saw that we benefited from that.
You definitely benefited from that. Take us inside a little bit. Like when you're watching two players, and I know you don't watch all of it, but when they're working on, say, their pick and roll chemistry, and we see this referenced at the pro game all the time, WNBA, NBA, two players working on it. What are they doing? How are they doing that? Are they talking through it? Are they walking through it? What are some of the things that happens?
There's no walking for KP.
Yeah.
There's no walking for Kelsey Plum. That's not a thing. And Aaliyah Boston working with Kelsey Plum, I know not to what AB does, but you know how you can have another player that elevates you. And I think that KP did a good job with her leadership and her work ethic and the way that she just led by example every single day. That if you're going to step on a court with her, if you're going to work with her, there's a level that you have to be at. And I think that AB did a good job of meeting that and also exceeding that. So for me, they talked, they ran, they shot, they did everything that you could think of for two players. They put themselves into situations that they were going to be in the game. They made reads, they played off each other, they shot threes together, and it came together very nicely for us.
It's beautiful. Is mostly was it 2-on-0, or did they have coaches guarding, or what did they do in terms of that?
I think it depends on the day, but if you allow Kelsey Plum to go 2-on-2, she would go 2-on-2 all day. But it was situational. Sometimes they would have defenders. Sometimes they would do 2-on-0. But for the most part, they would at least have a dummy defender, even if it wasn't, they weren't going 100%. But they still were intentional about what they were doing. And I think that matters because sometimes players could get out there and they, I don't know, maybe they misunderstand what the work actually is. But they were intentional about what they wanted to do and what they needed to do.
Survivorship is, or survivorship bias is a big word when it comes to the modern game.
Yeah,
And
that's
talk to us about that, because that's one of the things that I think as coaches that have been around for a long time, players that have been around a long time, we've got to get beyond some of these biases about the way the game was played or how it was coached in the past. So maybe talk to us about that process, what you've observed in yourself about overcoming some things that, okay, maybe back in the past, we used to do this, but now we don't do this anymore because we know it doesn't make as much sense. So talk to us about that.
for me, I have an open mind. I am a student of the game. When I played, I was a student of the game. And as a coach, I have to be a student of the game because I'm dealing with so many different players and personalities and skill sets and minds, basketball minds, that I'm open to so many different things. I never just look at the game like, oh, this is how I did it 10 years ago, or this is how I did it 5 years ago. The game is always evolving. So for me, continuing to study and continuing to understand my players and their skill sets and what they need, I think that's worked out well for me. Never forget this. I worked for Sandy Brondello for 3 years, and she used to always tell me, Ronnie, you can't be my way or the highway all the time. So that always sticks with me because it's easy to go back to what you knew or what you used to do, but all the time, that's just not the way. So for me as a coach, I've tried my best to be open-minded and understand that the game has evolved and that these players also have great basketball intuition and knowledge of the game.
I love that. Since you brought up Sandy, she's been on the podcast twice, but talk to us a little bit more about that concept, especially for a new head coach, balancing trust and control, because they're both important in some ways, but balancing them is the hard part.
Yeah. For me, I don't know how necessarily hard that was. I just looked at it as no different than when I talked about building those relationships with my players from the beginning. I knew my team. I started to understand who they were. I trusted them and they trusted me. So I understood what their focus level was like. I understood when they were focused. I understood when they had a little bit of slippage. I understood all of those things. And then when I think about defensively, I always understood what we needed based on the type of mistakes that we were making. Because I know that if we locked in, you're probably not going to mess up the pick and roll coverage. And if we are locked in, I knew how that looked. So for me, I guess I would like to say I just knew when I had to take control based on how things were going. And if I think about like offensively, if I had to step in and call a timeout or give them a play, it just went on based on flow, like how the game was flowing and what I saw us doing or what I saw us not doing. If I need to step in, because you never want to take away the autonomy from the players and have them making the decisions on their own. But I had a really good handle on who we were as a team and when I needed to step in and take control as opposed to trusting them.
Can you give us an example of that? You mentioned some of the coverage challenges, maybe say within pick and roll. And the first thing you said is, we got to do it better. Most of the time, just do it better. But when you do have to make an adjustment, what were some things that drove that decision in your mind?
Sometimes you could go into a game with a game plan. Let's say, for example, I could start out the game and saying that I'm going through on a certain player because the percentages aren't that high for that player to make a 3-point shot with the defender going under or through. But if I see that player has gained some confidence by hitting one or two, and I have to make that adjustment to call timeout and be able to say, hey, we can't go through on this player anymore. We need to go over, or whatever the case may be. We need to ISO, whatever the case may be. So I think just having an understanding of that, and also just having an open mind and not being stubborn and not being willing to make the necessary adjustment.
Receiving feedback from, let's say, assistant coaches first. You've been an assistant and you're the head coach. What are the ways that you enjoyed receiving feedback now as a head coach from your assistants?
I just love receiving information in general, especially in game. There's so many different things that's going on that you can't see everything. For one of my assistant coaches to give me information in the game, that's something, give me something tangible that I can make a correction on right then. That's super, super helpful for me. But I think the most important part of that is we talked about the roles of an assistant coach as well early on in the conversation, but having the assistants understand what they're looking at or what they're looking for as well, because sometimes you could easily get caught up in the game and just watching as opposed to understanding what your job is and the information that I need to help all of us. So I think just understanding what your job is and the information that I need that could be helpful to us all in that moment.
You referenced being a student of the game, and obviously you value that in your players, but what does that actually look like? When a coach says someone's a student of the game, what does that actually look like? What is different about them versus another player?
It means that you study the game. It means that you are a sponge for information. It means that you're a good listener. It means that you have a good work ethic, that you're not just studying and talking, you're actually out there working on it and always trying to find ways to get better. And I think as a coach, that's essential as well, because we also have to continue to grow and continue to evolve and have different levels of understanding of things. So for me, I've been open to that. And I think all of the experiences that I've had, I think I've been able to draw from those experiences when I had my chance to actually lead my team. And I think that I'm just grateful for all the opportunities that I had.
You coached a game, the game's done. What is Coach Hodges doing to evaluate her coaching within that game to be able to help her improve for the next game?
I'm going back and I'm looking at the film. I'm going to look at it from the broadcast angle, and I'm going to look at it from just the normal angle without sound. And I'm going to evaluate how I handled my ATOs. I'm going to evaluate my adjustments that I needed to make. I'm going to evaluate my substitution pattern. Anything that I could have done better, I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at it and ensure that I'm better for the next time that I'm in those same situations.
And was that alone, or did you involve peer to peer, or how did that process work?
I think it was steps to it, but I think the first step was always me watching the game back by myself. I'm one of those people that I like silence. So for me to go back and watch the game and have a deeper understanding of it before I go and watch it with somebody else was always important to me. And then maybe the next day I would get with the staff and we're able to talk through the game and talk through what we could have done better and some things that went well and then what we would do for the next game.
Talk to us a little bit about balancing the week of a schedule of practices. Obviously, Unrivaled is unique in the sense that I think you have a little bit more space in between games. Talk to us about balancing that and some of the lessons that you've learned with that.
Unrivaled was no different than any other season. You want to start at a certain level, but you also understand that fatigue is a thing. So you want to make sure that you are protecting the players, and you also want to make sure that everybody has the most energy and ready to play on game day. So you never want to overdo it. But I think that I started maybe going an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes, and then that tapered down as the season went because the foundation was already laid. All the work that we had put in before we got to the finals, before we got to midseason and all those things. So at that point, it was just sharpening up what we need to sharpen, going over our game plans and just making sure that we were still growing without tiring out, if that makes sense. And I also would like to add that, like the technology that is now involved with players with the Connexon and all of the data that's being tracked on their bodies and their sleep and exactly how fatigued they could be. I think having an understanding of that and how to use that, I think that it was helpful for me in being able to control some of those things and knowing when I should pull back and not.
Substitution patterns. Talk to us about that. Did you have a set substitution rotation, or was it based on feel, or was it a little bit of blended?
I think it was blended. One thing that I could hold my hat on is that I always wanted to be fair as a coach, regardless of who the player was. I wanted to have everybody bought in and believe in and understanding that this is how we're going to play and this is what's being asked. And are you going to uphold that or not, regardless of who it was? So I think my substitution pattern just went based on those things. And then also how the game was going and trying to keep players fresh, but also understanding who had the hot hand. I think my team did a really good job of being selfless in that regard, because sometimes you saw Kelsey Plum, maybe she didn't finish the game, or maybe AB didn't finish the game and Kiki was the closer. Cloud was the closer. It was based on how everybody was playing. And I think that we had that trust in each other and camaraderie in the locker room was good enough where I was able to do that. And that's something that I'm proud of within my team.
It sounds like a really fun experience to be able to balance that type of roster as you're mentioning the names and going, wait a minute, they're coming off the bench. It's a beautiful thing because obviously they're all in some way a starter or potentially a star player that's playing a different role. That's got to be one of the advantages of the unrivaled league for a lot of these players as well. Are you going in when you chose this roster, you put it together? How much flexibility are you building into this? Because you don't really know till you get them all together. And how long did that take to really figure out kind of style of play, roles, different things like that?
This could have been a little bit unorthodox, and I talked about this from the beginning with my team. I knew what I wanted their roles to be. I've been watching these players for years. So probably not that much has changed about their games and who they were. I just need to understand who they were as people. But I think that it brought us a lot of clarity and a lot of trust by talking about what your roles are from the beginning and talking about what the expectations are. And I think everybody bought into that, and we were able to be selfless because of those reasons. It was no doubt about what you needed to do or what was expected of you. And the one thing that I didn't want to have, being that we had so many great players, we had great players. I didn't want to have that issue where we were talking about playing time. So here's the job. Here's what I need you to do. Can you do it? And I think we did a really good job of buying in and being selfless in that regard and understanding that it could be anybody's day. And I think we played with that mindset and it brought us a ton of joy.
Love that. What a fun experience for you. And I've seen you speak about this before, developing confidence in players, particularly young players. And that's obviously a big part of your role as an assistant. And talk to us about this. How do you help players believe in themselves without becoming dependent on constant reassurance from a coach or from a staff, or we can substitute parent for youth level?
That's what it's about as a coach too. It's building them up and instilling confidence in them, because as much as you have to hold the player accountable, you also have to build them up and make sure that they're feeling good about themselves. So for me, I always want to speak life into the player. I always want to present the facts about who I think they are as players from the beginning, so they understand that I believe in them, regardless of what the situation is. I believe in you. I believe in your game. But it's going to boil down to putting in the work and trusting the work that you put in.
So if a player is going through a little bit of a slump or a down spell in their mind, what are some things that we can do as coaches to be able to help them?
I think it depends on that player, because every player needs something different. For some players, you can pull out some clips and you can watch video and you could go through each clip individually and talk about, what they did well. You could talk about what they could do a little bit better, just depending on that player in the space that they're in mentally at that time. Because sometimes you just need to show them doing something well, and that could just bring them back to life. Or sometimes we could just talk about some adjustments and corrections that we need to make. And then last but not least, you could always trust in the work. So we could always schedule 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it is that they need to get in the gym and make sure that we're working on some of the things that they're struggling with.
How did you find your perfect sideline demeanor?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how I found it. I just try to be myself. I talk to my players about this all the time, to just show up as your authentic self and let that be enough. So for me, I show up to the sideline with confidence. I show up to the sidelines just thinking about the game and how I'm supposed to be. I just let the Lord lead me pretty much.
So you're mentoring a current player who wants to be a future coach. What are some things or some advice that you would give them to be able to help them while they're still playing, to be able to start to think about that next step?
That's a good question, and I've been thinking about this a lot. And the one thing that always comes to my mind when I think about this is like the mindset that you have to have in order to be a coach. And it's totally different than the player. So for me, if you understand who you are and you know that you want to be a coach, just think about what professionalism looks like to you as a player and what professionalism looks like to a coach. Because there's no way that you could be a successful coach if you show up the same way that you showed up as a player, in a lot of different ways. So I think just having an understanding of that and understanding what it takes to actually be a coach, the time that goes in, the work, the preparation, and how much of yourself you actually have to give. And you may not be rewarded, but that's part of the job. I think if you have a good understanding of that and you are willing to commit to that, then it could be a rewarding transition.
I know my job in my space is changed a lot by technology and the continuing growth of technology. So I'm curious from your perspective, let's say as a WNBA assistant coach, how has technology changed your job, let's say over the last few years? Has it become more efficient? Has it become more effective? Less work, more work? Talk to us a little bit about that.
For me, I just look at it like I have another layer to fall back on. I always have feel and what I know. I always have the film, and then I have the analytics and all of those other things. But for me, like I talked about before, like I'm a player at heart. So I'm going to go off feel. I'm going to go off the film. I'm going to go off what I know. And I just use the analytics and the technology as just like another layer. I think that everybody uses it differently. And to each his own, everybody has to do what works best for them. But for me, at the core, I'm a player first.
As a player first, if you're going to teach something maybe that you didn't use in your career, say, let's say a deconstruction Euro, how are you doing that? Are you doing that first as a player in your mind? Are you taking yourself through it, going through it, trying to figure it out on your own before you teach it? Or is it something that you can just figure out from film at this point?
No, surely. I'm always going to study it first. I'm a visual learner, and I know everybody processes different information different and learn different. I have to see it first, and then I would take myself through it and see how it should be done before I start to teach it to somebody else. And I think that's also another aspect of coaching that could be lost. Just because you were a player does not mean that you give the information the same as you did when you were a player. You actually have to break it down, be able to break it down and teach the player what you're saying. Because as a player, you're so used to doing something. Like I've been doing this for 20 years, so it just comes second nature to me. But that doesn't necessarily mean I know how to teach it or that I know how to break it down because it's so easy for me. But that's a layer that could be overlooked because you also have to be able to teach the game and also explain it to a player in a way that they understand it, not just the way that I understand it.
I think that's an important point you're making, especially for a player transitioning to coaching, is that they may be able to figure it out and do it easier than they can explain it and teach it initially.
Surely.
Talk to us a little bit about the next step for you in your development then. So you've had these two experiences and now you're going back into a WNBA season. Talk to us about that next step for you developing with these two experiences now.
For me, I take every experience that I have and I try to learn and grow from every experience. So for me, going back to Connecticut and going back into the WNBA is just going to be about how I can implement some of the things that I've learned into the Connecticut Sun within my role, within my position, because that's always something that's going to be important regardless of the success that I had. I want to make sure that I continue to grow. I want to make sure that I continue to respect everything that we have going on in Connecticut. So for me, it's just going to be just intentionally being able to do that and continuing to grow and make sure that I'm staying on my path.
And you do feel, obviously, that a lot of the 3-on-3 concepts that you learned in Unrivaled, they do transfer to the 5-on-5.
Oh, surely. Obviously, Unrivaled in 3-on-3 is a different game just because there's so much space. But to me, basketball is still basketball and it's essentially played in threes. We'll have the two players that's in the corner. So some of those things are still going to apply. Some of the sets and stuff that you saw teams running Unrivaled, it's the same type actions. It's just three players as opposed to five. So I think it definitely translates. And when we're talking about defensively, it's going to start with the 1-on-1. You can have help. We can have different schemes and things that we could use in a 5-on-5 and have more options, but it's still ultimately going to start with 1-on-1 and that pick and roll defense.
Is there anything that particularly stood out from the Unrivaled experiences that maybe you would love to see move into the WNBA, whether it's a rule or something else that is a part of that league?
I would like to not mix the two. I think that they both have their own different differences and some similarities. But I'm grateful for Unrivaled and the opportunity that it has provided for me as a young coach, just being having that training ground and having those reps, and then the opportunity that they're providing for these players to have everything that they need at their beck and call, to be able to get paid with their worth, to have the game grow and to have the popularity grow, to have the players using their platforms and all of those things that came with Unrivaled. I'm grateful.
Talk to us a little bit, lastly, about some of the different mentors that you've had in coaching. Like, I look at your career as a player and your career as a coach, and one of the benefits is that you've had a lot of different experiences around coaches. So maybe share a few of the insights and a few of the lessons from some of the best that you've learned from.
Ooh, I've taken something away from everybody that I've encountered and everybody that I've worked with. I'll just start with Nikki Fargus. She was the first one to open her doors to me. When she worked at LSU, I was just trying to get into coaching and she welcomed me in with open arms. And I think the thing that I took from her was support. That's what support looks like. Like, it wasn't about money. She didn't have any money to pay me, but to be able to open the doors and provide to me what she had. That was good for me. And then Delisha Milton Jones, I think that's the place where I learned the importance of how you assemble a staff and the importance of that in your success. And then I go to Colgate with Ghaniyat Adedunton at Colgate University, and I like to call it, or we all know, it's a high academic institution. In the way that she prepared, in the way that she showed up, in the way that she had the blueprint for everything. So if you had a question, Chris, she would have a document that went A, B, C, D, E, F, G of how you should do it. And that was a very valuable lesson and experience for me. And then with Sandy, Sandy is a great offensive mind. So for me to be able to stand next to her and watch her work, that was something that it was an invaluable experience. I can't put it into words, but I'm forever grateful for Sandy and the opportunity that she provided for me. And she also allowed me to grow at my own pace. And then lastly, Rashid. The situation that I got into with Connecticut and the way that he's trusted me and the way he's allowed me to grow and use my voice and my institutional knowledge has been great for my career and a path that I'm going on.
You're grateful for them, and we're grateful for you, Coach. Thanks for sharing with us, and thanks for sharing all your experiences and all you've done in the game.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, Chris.